Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, and I am the co-director of the Cairo Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice at Union Theological Seminary, and I am co-chair with the Reverend Dr. William Barber of the Poor People's Campaign, A National Call for Moral Revival. It's good to be with you.
So let's start out with healthcare. You have been part of a couple of actions now around trying to stop whatever version of Trump Care is moving through the Senate and to fight against cuts to Medicaid. Can you tell us a little bit about the actions that have gone on?
Great. Yeah. So, many folks have been coming together in lots of different ways, including impacted people. Last Tuesday, in Washington, D.C., in front of Senator McConnell's office, clergy and other impacted folks who are, very upset, both about the proposed cuts and changes, as well as the lack of faith leaders standing up against this kind of devaluing of life, decided to do civil disobedience in front of McConnell's office. And folks were led by Reverend Dr. William Barber from the Forward Together Moral Mondays movement, Reverend Tracy Blackman from the United Church of Christ Justice Witness Ministry, as well as Reverend Jennifer Butler out of Faith and Public Life. And people of various faiths, and again, those that will be impacted if the ACA is repealed and if more medical cuts and healthcare cuts are done, stage a demonstration and a civil union, saying that, we can't be silent anymore around these things and that we, are joining with others across the country who are speaking out about how these cuts are killing people and that we need to kill, Trump Care in its various forms before it kills so many more of us.
Yeah. And that was last week. And then this week, the story keeps changing. I guess the bill is dead. The bill is not dead. They're going to just repeal it. Then they're not going to be able to just repeal it. Now they're having an emergency meeting tonight about trying to revive it. So people are still, I think people are actually getting arrested down in D.C. as we're talking. Obviously, this is still a live issue. So tell us about what's gone on this week down in D.C.
Yeah, so faith leaders have joined again with others to continue to kind of hold the pressure to folks. So people were arrested yesterday associated with Auburn Theological Seminary and various Black clergy networks, saying that the fight around healthcare is a human rights issue and that, we can't cut 22 million people off if we just repeal the ACA, folks say that will be 32 million people being cut off. I mean, just that no matter what is going on, that healthcare has to be an issue, it's a moral issue, and that people are going to maintain, doing these acts of social obedience, standing with people who are impacted by this and raising these issues until we actually fight for a healthcare system that protects all. A lot of what people have been saying is it's not just that we're reacting to currently what's going on, but we're actually putting out a proactive vision of the universal healthcare system that we should even have in the first place.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more. You said that part of the motivation was to call on faith leaders to speak up about this. Talk a little bit more about why it's important as faith leaders to be part of the movement to stop Trump Care, the movement for universal health care, and all of that.
Yeah, so I think that, part of why we see it as really important for faith leaders to step up in this is because, you know, healthcare and all of these issues are moral issues. And for too long, morality has been confined to, you know, a very few number of issues, many of which are barely discussed in sacred traditions and texts. And they've been in the confines of the hands of folks that are trying to exclude and oppress. And instead saying that, you know, if we look at various religious texts, including, you know, the tradition of Christianity that I come from, you know, Jesus travels around the countryside, you know, healing people for free. That clearly Jesus had a universal healthcare system, but somehow in this time, in this moment, these kinds of healthcare cuts, this kind of repeal of the ACA is all being done in the name of, and with the support of many, Christians and politicians who claim to be Christian. And so it's really important for faith leaders to say, no, this is a moral issue. It's a moral issue whenever you kill people because you deny them Medicare and Medicaid, whenever you deny people health care because they have pre-existing conditions, that this is not okay in any of our sacred faith. And that that is the responsibility, not just of those that are that is the responsibility of everybody, including our moral leaders and clergy, to not just talk a good talk, but actually be out there with people who are impacted, fighting for the kind of healthcare system that we all need.
Yeah. So looking forward, I guess we still sort of don't know. I mean, obviously they're not going to stop trying to kill this thing. But tell us sort of what comes next for you, both around healthcare and on a, you know, on a broader scale.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, we're not sure what's going to happen around healthcare. I mean, what we are sure is that, you know, people are very motivated to try to stop bad things from happening, and we'll have to keep the pressure up and make it very clear to our politicians that that healthcare is an issue that unites a lot of us and that we are committed to fighting around. And we are also trying to kind of link the issue of healthcare to other social justice issues and things that are impacting people. So just the day before I and others were arrested last week, you know, we were participating in a housing rights, a tenant rights march. And in jail, we actually connected up with folks that were in D.C. doing obedience around anti-militarism and anti-war march. Then on Monday, Reverend Barbara and I and others led a group of clergy and others around a press conference, and then we actually had a meeting with the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the United Nations, making the connection between voter suppression and the attack on our democracy that's taking place right now, including with this Election Integrity Commission, this fraudulent commission that has been set up by President Trump and is being vice-chaired by someone who the Senate Minority Leader has called the most racist person in the country, you know, and trying to see the connection between voter suppression and the denial of health care and the low wages that people are fighting, and trying to pull all of those groups and all those issues into what we're seeing as the need for a Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, where we connect these different issues and the groups that are impacted directly by these issues and pull them together into a large movement, a fusion movement that works across race and geography and issues into something that can be a powerful force and kind of finish some of the unfinished work that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was doing in the last year of his life. And he was assassinated trying to build a focusing campaign now, and then 50 years later, we see that need to connect racism, systemic racism, poverty, militarism, and ecological devastation into, like, a large movement and campaign to bring people together.
Yeah. I was struck the other day by the press conference where Reverend Barber and other folks were connecting the dots of voter suppression and the lack of Medicaid expansion, which is already, you know, denying a lot of people health insurance. And it seems particularly relevant right now to sort of note the way that political disenfranchisement leads to these actual material consequences for people.
Exactly. And so, I mean, part of the reason we went and met with the High Commissioner of Human Rights, who is gravely concerned about, you know, systemic racism and poverty in the United States of America, is because we were trying to draw these connections and you know, and show the country and the world that, for one, that these are linked, right? That also what will be a central pillar of the work that we're doing in our proposal campaign will be the indivisibility of these rights, including looking at the fight against voter suppression and for our democracy. Because when you suppress votes, when votes don't count, then when people get into office because of racist voter suppression, they pass policies that have a really grave detrimental impact on the poorest of all races. And so to see actually this kind of divide and conquer that has been a part of U.S. politics, you know, since really our founding, to say, like, this has to stop and that we, from the bottom, are going to unite and build and see the connections between voter suppression and the attack on Medicare and Medicaid and ACA and all of the work for healthcare. And, you know, a budget right now that's being proposed that is the largest, will be, if passed, the largest transfer of wealth from the bottom up, like a reverse Robin Hood, right, since Civil War, right? I mean, so we're just talking massive. And so this is all so connected, right? And if we just see voter suppression over there and healthcare over here and housing cuts over there and don't actually see that the same people who are denying us healthcare are suppressing our votes and who are cutting, you know, making us homeless, like that, then we never will come together and be smart enough to come together and actually do something that will change, you know, the conditions in the United States and make the majority of us who are poor and low income and one or two paychecks away from being low income into something that's a powerful force in this country and says that, you know, social justice principles need to be done.
Great. So how can people keep up with you and with the campaigns that you're working on?
Great. So folks can check out both the Cairo Center, which is KAIROSCENTER.org, both on social media and our website, as well as VoteForCampaign.org. And there'll be more and more announcements about 15 public events that the Corporate Campaign is doing in the next couple of months all over the country and regions across the country, as well as the plan in December of this year will announce the major plans that we have for the spring of 2018 to do a massive mobilization in 25 states across the country and in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. So there's a lot to be involved in, and so it would be great to look at. So, you know, check those things out and
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.